Well, good morning. This is Lee Cook at La Crescenta Presbyterian Church, and today is January 30th, 2019. I'm not sure when you'll be listening to this, but today is the day when that polar vortex is coming down into the Midwest, and it's like negative 24 in Chicago or something, and here in sunny Southern California, it's actually like 72 degrees. So I'm very grateful to be here. If you are listening in Chicago, I'm sorry for you. But anyway, we wanted to do a podcast here at LCPC just to give you an opportunity to dig deeper into the sermon series that we're doing. I'm not just going to go through the sermon again. There will be some overlap, but we just wanted to give you an opportunity maybe to dig a little deeper to connect with the scriptures a little more deeply. And so I hope you'll just kind of sit back, grab a cup of coffee. I have my coffee here. So you might hear me sip it every now and then. But I hope you'll just relax, grab your Bible. We can turn to Matthew chapter 8. That's where we're going to be this morning. So I just hope you'll just enjoy this. Please give us feedback. Let us know what we could do better. I'm going to be doing this over the next few months. So I'm going to be learning as we do this. So this morning, we're going to be talking about Matthew chapter 8. And we've skipped over in our sermon series, we skipped over the Sermon on the Mount. And the Sermon on the Mount ends with the people being amazed. It says that Jesus finished saying these things. The crowds were amazed at his teaching because he taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers of the law. And this is an important key theme. If we're going to put a key theme on Matthew chapter 8, and maybe even the rest of Matthew, it will be that theme, authority. What does it mean that Jesus has authority? What does he have authority over? What is it, and what are the ramifications of this authority? And you're going to see the Greek word authority, over and over again. I hope after I've said authority so many times now, it's starting to lose all meaning. But just look through, as you read chapter 8, see how many times authority comes up. In fact, we're going to see it all the way through the rest of the Gospel of Matthew. And so it first occurs here in chapter 7, and it feels like what's happening is Matthew's telling us this story, and that the people begin to recognize that Jesus has authority, and now Jesus is going to show us what that authority looks like, and then what are the ramifications of that authority. So let's talk for a minute about what does he have authority over. We can see in the Sermon on the Mount that Jesus has authority over the law, as it were. He teaches the law in a different way. And when you look at the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, you've heard it said, and then he usually quotes something from the Old Testament, that you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder. He says, but I tell you this. And it seems as if Jesus has the authority to reinterpret and reimagine what the law truly is about. And this is a very powerful thing. This is something that Moses had authority to do, right? Moses gave the law. As a matter of fact, Matthew can be divided into five major discourses. There are five sort of beginning and ends of Jesus having these discourses. And many commentators have looked at that and said, wow, there are five books in the law, in the Torah, the first five books of the Bible, what we call the Pentateuch. There are five of those, five books of the Torah, and Jesus and Matthew can be divided into five discourses. And so what many commentators over the years have believed that Jesus is now the new Moses, right? That he is writing kind of a new Torah. Many scholars debate that, especially over the last, probably 30 or 40 years. Many scholars say, well, it doesn't break down that easily. Doesn't work that way. But at least what we can tell for sure is that Jesus has authority over the law, that he is kind of like this new Moses who's giving a new law, not to replace the old one, but rather, as Jesus says, many people accused him of trying to undo the law. And what Jesus says, no, I haven't come to abolish the law, but I've come to fulfill it. I've come to bring it to its fruition, what it was supposed to be in the first place. So Jesus has authority over the law. Jesus has, in this passage in chapter 8, we see that he has the authority to heal. And this is going to be a huge portion of what this is about, that he has this authority to heal. Just later, after Jesus has in the story about the centurion's faith, Jesus gets into a boat with his disciples. There's a big storm, and this story is told in Mark and as well. But Jesus is asleep. The disciples wake him up. He gets up and he calms the wind and the waves. And it says that once he does that, he says to them, "Why were you so afraid? Why did you doubt?" And then it says, "The men were amazed and asked, 'What kind of man is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him.'" So it doesn't use the word authority, but what we see happening is, yes, Jesus has authority over the created order, the wind and the waves. And it's even deeper than that, because often, very often, oceans and seas were considered places of chaos. And so Jesus even seems to have authority over this chaos of the seas. Jesus has, we're going to see down, and we're going to, in a couple of weeks, we're going to do a sermon on chapter 9 where Jesus heals the paralytic, and he actually does so by forgiving his sins. And so we'll talk more about that in 2 weeks. But what we need to know is that Jesus says, "I have authority to forgive sins." So he has authority over to reinterpret the law. He has authority to heal. He has authority over the wind and the waves. He has authority to forgive sins. And then at the very end of the Gospel of Matthew in chapter 28, his last words to his disciples are, "All authority on heaven and earth has been given to me." And he sends them out. He recommissions them to go out. And he even maybe passes on that authority. And we'll talk about that as we get there. But what one of the things Matthew, in telling the story about Jesus, he's sort of put everything together. And he wants us to begin to think about, what does this authority mean? Who has this authority? And it's a huge theme for Matthew. Now, we're going to go through the story of the healing of the centurion, the centurion's servant. And I want you to kind of just see how this authority plays out. It says, when Jesus had entered Capernaum, which has kind of been his base, it says a centurion came to him asking for help. "Lord," he said, "my servant lies at home paralyzed, suffering terrible." The word servant it's a little ambiguous. It could mean child or it could mean servant. It probably does mean servant here, but it's a servant who has near and dear to this centurion's heart. He's willing to walk, you know, to go meet Jesus. And so this centurion is really hurting, but he comes to Jesus. Now, the centurion, we know, is a Gentile. He is not a Jewish person. And one of the things Matthew is going to be really sensitive about is that Jesus never goes on purpose to Gentiles in the Gospel of Matthew. There are some Gentiles who come in, and we'll talk about what that means in just a minute, but Jesus believes that his ministry is to the lost sheep of Israel. And that, of course, that ministry is going to get bigger, and we're going to see how that works in just a second. But this centurion, this Gentile centurion coming up to him is kind of a strange occurrence. And then it says, Jesus said to him, "Shall I come and heal him?" In many translations of verse 7, it stated, he says, "Okay, I'll come and heal him." The Greek here is really ordered as a question. And the question could be that, I mean, we could read the question this way: "You want me to come with you to heal him?" And there's some play on sort of the cultural things of Jesus' day. For a Jew of the first century, to go to a Gentile's house would have defiled them. It would have made them ritually unclean. So then they would have had to go through all these sort of cleansing rituals to make themselves ritually pure again, to be able to, you know, participate in the faith life of Israel. Jews didn't go into Gentiles' houses, and we see that the centurion understands what's happening. He understands the sort of cultural layers that are happening here. And he says, the centurion replied, "Lord, I do not deserve to have you come under my roof." And that would be the sort of way of saying that when you go under someone's roof, it would have defiled a Jew of Jesus' day. He says, "But just say the word and my servant will be healed." And so he says, "I don't need you to come under my roof. I'm not worthy of that. I know that for a Jew, a teacher of the law, that it would defile you. You don't have to do that. I believe you can just say the word and it'll happen." Then Jesus, he says, "For I myself am a man under authority." There's that word. "With soldiers under me." In other words, he says, I have commanders over me, and I have people under my authority. And then he says, He says, I tell this one to go, and he goes. And I tell that one to come, and he comes. And I say to my servant, do this, and he does it. You see, the centurion understands authority. He understands how, I mean, he has an analogy of what this would look like. He says, people command me, I do it. I command people, they do it. I understand how authority works. And Jesus, I believe you have authority. And so he's willing to just say, at your word, I understand it'll be done. I don't need you to come and say hocus pocus. I don't need you to do any wave your hands or anything. Just say the word. I know it'll be done because I believe you have authority. Now, it says in verse 10 of chapter 8, it says, when Jesus heard this, he was amazed. Now, this is once again, if you're kind of following along, underline this, because the Greek word here is thaumazo, is never used with Jesus as its subject, except here. In other words, Jesus is never amazed by anything, right? Jesus is never amazed or shocked or surprised in the Gospel of Matthew. He says, but here he says he is amazed by this. And so this is a big thing. He says, he tells this the people that are following, he says, truly I tell you, I have not found anyone in Israel with such great faith. Now, this is hugely surprising to Jesus, and it should also be surprising to the people who are following him. Jesus says, no one in Israel has showed me this kind of faith. He says, I say to you that many will come from the east and the west and will take their places. And we're going to come back to this, but what I want you to see is that Jesus is amazed by his faith. So let's talk about faith for a second. Faith is a very misunderstood concept, and it's a very broad, I say misunderstood, but it's a very broad concept in our culture. We generally think of faith as like an attitude or like a worldview. In fact, most of the time in the Western world, we think of faith as something that we believe in. Like, I believe in God, I believe in aliens, I believe in, you know, I believe something exists out there. I believe that, you know, I believe in black holes. I believe in that, you know, that the astronauts landed on the moon. You know, it's something that it's like, I believe in something, that something happened, that something is real. But this is actually a really misunderstanding of faith, especially the kind of faith that Jesus wants from his followers. The kind of faith that Jesus wants from his followers is a kind of faith that is a recognition of his authority. And that's what we see here. Faith is a recognition of God's authority, or particularly here, Jesus' authority. The centurion recognizes his authority, and not only recognizes, he recognizes his authority and he submits to that authority. He surrenders to that authority. He says, Jesus, you don't have to come to my house. You just say the word and it'll be done. I'm surrendering to your authority over this sickness. I surrender to it. And that's what faith is. Faith is not an attitude. It's not a worldview. It's not a kind of an outlook on life. Faith is a concrete, specific act of obedience to the authority of God, of Jesus here, right? It is a specific act. And so that's why Jesus, because the people, the Jews of Jesus' day, of course, they believe in God. They believe in the law. They sort of order their lives around it. But Jesus says, when I've come on the scene, I haven't seen anybody have faith yet in me. And this centurion is showing me faith. And so as you think about faith, and I want you to think deeply about what that means for you, faith is not abstract, right? Faith is always concrete. And we see that in Abraham. Abraham had concrete faith in God. He left his father and his mother and he went to a land. You know, we see these people who have a practical, concrete faith. And I think that's what Jesus is calling us to do. And it's sort of, he just right after this, when Jesus calms the storms, he says, you didn't have faith. You didn't have this concrete faith, this concrete trust in my authority over the wind and the waves. And that's why you were afraid. And so, so faith is always this concrete thing. It is always an act of obedience and surrender and recognition to Jesus' authority. So you want to, as you think through this, as you see that, I also want, that's another huge theme of Matthew, of course, is faith. How do we faith is a recognition of Jesus' authority and a surrendering to that authority. And you can see, and of course, the authority and faith always go hand in hand. If someone doesn't have authority, we can't have faith in them. We can't trust them and give our lives to them. But if they do, if we recognize that authority, then we surrender to it. Now, the last thing in this passage, in this healing of the centurion, and we're just going to focus on 5 through 13 this morning, but the last part is Jesus says something that is really incredibly, maybe even disturbing to his listeners, and maybe even to us. Jesus, he says that no one in Israel has had this kind of faith, and he says, I say to you that many will come from the east and the west and will take their places at the feast with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But the subjects of the kingdom will be thrown outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now, this is huge. Okay, so one of the things that people believed is that when God finally returned to Israel and sort of brought the world back into order, what they believed is there would be this powerful, that Israel would be released from the bondage, in particular to Rome. But, Israel had been scattered, in exile, and then they kind of came back, but they were in bondage to Rome. And one of the things that God promised is that God would bring them back, and he would sort of put them back in their place, and he would punish the Gentiles for destroying them. We can see that in Isaiah and Jeremiah and other places. And we see that that's sort of the expectation, and that there was going to be this great sort of messianic feast that would happen. And of course, Abraham is there, and Isaac is there, and Jacob is there. And what Jesus is saying is, though, they're going to be, the people who are going to be invited to that meal are going to be different than the ones we expected. It's going to be people from the east and the west. It's going to be these Gentiles, just like the centurion, who are going to come in. Now, the people that are the ethnic Jews, the people that are ethnically the children of Abraham, they are going to be surprised, because they are going to be cast out into the outer darkness, and where there's going to be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And that's sort of an Old Testament idea of weeping and gnashing of teeth is what happens when we are left out of God's plan, when we are rejected by God. That's what happens when that happens. So what we see is that the people who are believing that just being ethnically related to Abraham is not enough. And John the Baptist says that at the very beginning of the Gospel of Matthew, right? He says that, God, you're trusting in your ethnic identity, but that's not enough. And so what Jesus is doing here is he's saying that God has authority. Remember, authority is a huge deal, and that faith is a recognition of that authority. And he says, now he has authority. He's going to make a brand new people of God, a brand new Israel, as it were, right? A brand new conduit of blessing for the world. And that new blessing, that new Israel, is not going to be made up simply of people who are ethnically related to Abraham. Rather, it's going to be a new Israel, people who are going to be grafted into all of the promises of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And what's going to make them be grafted into this family is going to be faith in Jesus Christ, right? It's going to be faith that he is the Messiah. It's going to be people like the centurion, people all over, these Gentiles who are going to be coming in and who are going to be now part of this great banquet, this great messianic feast, this great sort of what we might call an end times kind of celebration. And they're going to be brought in. And what's going to make people part of this new sort of newly created Israel is not going to be, again, it's not going to be ethnic relationship to Abraham, but is going to be faith in Jesus. And he's sort of reimagining and reinventing, bringing in all these new people into this new Israel. And we're going to see that happen. And so here, once again, if the people who don't have faith, the faith of the centurion, unfortunately, are going to be left out somehow. Now, I know that opens a huge can of worms in terms of what we believe about hell and what we believe about heaven and what we believe about predestination. And honestly, this morning, I'm not going to get into those things. But it is important to see that that's what Jesus is saying. And not only that, but he's echoing what John the Baptist said at the beginning, that being relying on our ethnic identity as God's people is not going to do this. It's not going to be enough. We're going to have to recognize and surrender to the authority of the Messiah of Jesus. And so we're going to see that. And this Sunday in our sermon, we're going to talk about some of the ramifications of that. But I wanted you to see, to kind of be able to dig deeper into what Matthew's doing here and see these stories. So hopefully we're going to be continuing to do more of these podcasts, and you'll be able to connect with God's word in a powerful way. Please, give us feedback. Let us know what you think, what we could do better. And as always, I say this, the reason we study the Bible, the primary reason we study the Bible, is not to know the Bible more. The reason we study the Bible is to have a deeper relationship with Jesus Christ. So we're praying for you, and stop on by LCPC. We'd love to see you.